Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I am back. It's Travis Hobson, and this is Cinema Royale. And I haven't been here in a few weeks. I have been away for various reasons, one of which is San Diego Comic-Con, which I was at all last week. And then a couple weeks before that, I was just so busy getting ready that I never could find time to do the show. So we haven't been here in a little while. And then this show is all jacked up, because I got technical difficulties and I am unable to upload any clips. So no clips from the movies this week, which include Atomic Blonde and Detroit, and no clips from Comic-Con, which is really disappointing to me. So I don't know how this show is going to go. It feels weird already. It feels strange to not have the clips that I would normally like to use. But hey, those are the difficulties of live radio. Hopefully we can get those things sorted out for next week and everything will be back to normal. But for this week, no clips. I still got music. So I think I still got music. Make sure I got music. Okay, so we still got music. Just no movie clips, no Comic-Con audio. This week's show, my buddy Tim Gordon, who was already in the lobby, about to bring him in a second. He's going to come in, and we're going to talk Atomic Blonde. It was Charlize Theron. I got to see a lot of her at Comic-Con. She had a panel all to herself, which was a lot of fun. We're going to talk about Atomic Blonde and Detroit, which I'm really eager to get an opinion on. I know I have a general idea of what he thinks about it, but I want to give him the opportunity to express himself about Detroit. It's Catherine Bigelow's film about the 12th Street riots in Detroit in 1967 or 1968. I don't remember the exact year. So as the president of the Black Reel Awards and the creator of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, I know he's going to have a strong take on that. And then at about 20, 30 minutes in, my buddy Wilson Morales, who was my partner in crime at Comic-Con, he's supposed to call in. We'll see if it actually happens. And we're gonna talk about some of the stuff we saw at Comic-Con. It was a great week, I'll talk about it some more when he comes in, or maybe after this segment. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Saw a lot of great stuff. All right, let's go ahead and bring in Tim Gordon right now. Tim Gordon of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, the president of the Black Reel Awards. What up, Tim?
My man, what is going on with you, my brother?
That's good, man. Everything is good. I was just talking about how the show's got some Blog Talk Radio is screwing around with the audio. Ain't nothing working. Ain't nothing uploading today. So I wasn't able to add any new clips to the movie. It felt all weird starting the show without my usual clip right at the beginning. I was like, man, this is strange. But
Been there and done that.
It sucks, man. This is what happens when you don't start creating your show until like an hour before it starts.
Been there as well.
But that's my usual thing. I don't create a show until right before I do it, because nothing's ever locked down for me. You know what I mean? Every time I get people to be on the show, it's never confirmed until I don't start the show until everything is confirmed. Otherwise, what's the point?
I mean, that makes sense. That's a way to look at it. But now I'm sorry that you don't have your stuff the other day.
But now I see what the point is. The point is that I would know if the audio was working.
Right. Yeah. Again, like I said, it's live radio, man. People know. They understand. It's a podcast world.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, we're going to talk about let's talk about Detroit because I really want to hear what you had to say about this. We talked a little bit about it, but we talked a little bit about these kinds of movies before we saw Detroit, but not so much after because I really had to run. Detroit is Catherine Bigelow's new film, once again working with the Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty writer Mark Bowl. It's based on the 12th Street riots in Detroit. But it's not really about the riots as a whole. It's about one particular event that happened, and this is the event at the Algiers Motel where three black men were killed by police. Practically a dozen black men and a couple of white women were held captive throughout the entire night as corrupt and racist cops, quote unquote, looked for a sniper. I think that was just a pretext for everything they really wanted to do, which was brutalize these people. It's about that event, and it is based on true events. And you know, for me, I actually really thought this movie was intense. It was tough to watch, as these movies tend to be for guys like us. You know, they're really difficult to sit through and not get angry. But you couldn't help but notice all the parallels. I think that's one of the reasons why Catherine Bigelow made this movie is because of the parallels to today and the police brutality that continues to go on. You know, I whispered to you during the movie, it's like, this thing could have happened yesterday. You know, the stuff that's going on out here in this movie.
Right.
So the echoes are unmistakable. I enjoyed it, you know, for how much you can enjoy a movie like this. But I know for you, there are deeper issues with it. What's your overall impression of Detroit?
Well, I think my overall impression is that I think Catherine Bigelow is a above average filmmaker. I think that as you remarked earlier, you know, earlier work Zero Dark Thirty, The Hurt Locker, she makes a certain type of film where she majors in bringing a sense of high intensity and high drama to whatever she does, and she's very good at it. And in Detroit, she does the same thing. My issue with this film, and I echo everything you said, that it's a very hard movie to watch because when you're black in America and you watch these movies, you know, I can't speak for how other people view them, but I know that these things strike close to home. And this story, of course, and you were asking earlier, or I heard you earlier, saying you wasn't really sure what year it was. It was 1967. So it's the 50th anniversary of those riots.
That's right.
And the story on why, you know, I was so bothered is because I'm from Newark, New Jersey. So we talk about the riots in 1967. Those riots happened in Detroit. They happened in Newark. They happened in a lot of urban cities. And as I watched the movie.
Too, didn't they happen in D.C. As well? Weren't there
riots? They did happen in D.C. as well.
Yeah.
They did happen here as well. So as I watched the movie, what really made it difficult and got me really angry, and I've been talking about it for like 2 days, is that you remarked that Catherine Bigelow made this movie because to you maybe she said that there were the parallels of that event and then the parallels to what happens today. That's exactly the reason why I was so in my feelings as a man, not necessarily as a film critic. As a film critic, I had to separate myself when I watched this story and think about me personally, and not just me, but people who look like me versus what the experience is on screen. And part of my issue with it is that, you know, when I think about this movie, right, I think about this, and I think about when I watch, you know, films about the Holocaust, right? And this is probably the easiest way to kind of break this out, Travis, is that when you see people who are or Jewish descent watch Holocaust movies, even though the stories are sad, they're sort of, to me, made with a sense of pride that we were able to overcome this. And these are stories that are part of our lore, and we look at them because we know we've advanced to a certain place where these are not the realities that we deal with. We don't have a Holocaust that goes on today. The problem with African Americans is when we watch films that show our history, and those films can be films that deal with slavery or more modern films that deal with the civil rights movement, part of the frustration and a lot of the anger is that these films are a part of our lore, but it's not that we as a people have overcome, because that story that happened in Detroit, if the situation
today.
Were right tonight, that situation mm-hmm. could happen tonight again
right.
in the
right.
exact same way. So, and, you know, and not to politicize what we're talking about, but, you know, when you have the chief executive of the country give a talk to police unions where you almost are endorsing police brutality on in July of 2017,
ain't
you know,
almost
it's
about
like,
it. He was endorsing police brutality, and they cheered for
right,
it.
Right, but that's my point. My point to you is that's why, I mean, I understand, you know, I don't understand, and it would be cool to hear the intent of Kathryn Bigelow, but this is a story, man, that to me fits in what I call the one-off category. You know, I compare it to 12 Years a Slave, Precious, and these sorts of movies that literally I could just watch them one time. I got it. You will never get my money again or my attention span to watch that movie. It was painful to watch. It didn't advance. I didn't feel it advanced much of anything other than it wasn't like any of the film was a surprise. I mean, you know, later on in the film when we get repercussions and we get an expected result, it's because it's what we have understood about how our criminal justice system works. And for me, the deeper meaning and why I was so upset is that I get tired as a film critic and then equally as a man of watching Hollywood tell these stories that I think that exploit black pain on the screen for entertainment. And I was highly offended by that in ways that I was for years, a couple of years ago when Django Unchained came out. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm just very
yeah.
frustrated. Not to say that Detroit, I don't think, I think it's a very well-executed film. It will be in the conversation for Best Picture this year, absolutely.
Right.
I pray to God it doesn't win, because and it almost is sad that it'll be nominated or has a chance to be nominated, because I got to go through the 6 weeks during the Academy of, again, another film that's sad that people are telling me, yeah, man, this film is important. You need to check it out. Much like last year with the whole situation with Moonlight. And if you really want to be honest, that pain is a cottage industry in Hollywood, because Manchester by the Sea was a sad, depressing-ass story, which wasn't about ethnic race, but this whole pain aspect,
that's
you know, we don't...
That's just the prospect. That's just the award season for you.
But I'm just saying, it's a much deeper conversation.
Sadness
equals
quality.
Yeah, it's a much deeper conversation.
Sadness equals quality. But,
yeah,
but to go back to what you're saying, just talk about Bigelow and her reasons for it, I'll just read what she said with her explanations for it when she talked to CBS today. And here's what she said. Quote, "When I was first introduced to it, it was right around the time of Ferguson, Missouri. And I'm thinking, this is 50 years ago today, and yet it's happening today. It's happening tomorrow. It's recurring far too often, and I hope, perhaps, it can invite a dialogue to encourage a bridge between incredible racial divides in this country," quote unquote. So that was her reasons for wanting to do Detroit. And I think she has the best of intentions. When I look at the movies that she's done, when I wrote my review of Detroit, I basically said that along with The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, they comprise a sort of loose-knit trilogy on combat. You know what I mean? That's kind of how they are. They're all different aspects, different versions of a battlefield in a sense. And Detroit is very much a battlefield. The battlefield in Detroit is one littered with racial tensions. And it's a very different kind of war that's going on in Detroit. But like all three of those movies, they all have relevance to today. And I think that's what she's trying to do, is make movies that are relevant to today. So I think she has the best of intentions when she makes Detroit. I don't think she's simply making a movie to entertain. She's making a movie that's trying to make a point. And I respect that. I think all of her movies are trying to make a point. So I like that.
Well, you know what? And again, you and I, you know, we both, you know, I respect what your opinion. I know you respect mine, and to a certain extent, I agree with you, man. I don't even know how to put it into words, man. Kind of what I feel, because it's not that I'm mad at Kathryn Bigelow, right?
Yeah.
I think it's more about I'm mad about the consequences of what I'm watching and how it kind of lends itself to this kind of continuous narrative where, you know, nothing ever changes.
I think that's more of the frustration. I think that's the frustration.
So I don't want people listening thinking that I'm mad at Catherine Bigelow or I'm questioning Catherine Bigelow's motives, because all Catherine Bigelow is doing is putting a camera on something and telling a story that occurred, which has parallels to the day. And a critic friend of ours, and I'm not going to say her name, as we're getting on the elevator, I'm all in my feelings, goes, "Oh, my God, that is such a timely story." And I wanted to bark back and go, "No, it's not timely. It's timeless, because that story can happen anytime." It's not a one-off sort of a situation.
But
that's what I think about Detroit. But if I had to give Detroit
movie...
a grade.
Yeah, go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I had to give Detroit a grade, I would give Detroit a B. But like I said, man, it's a hard movie to even recommend to people. So, you know, people keep asking me, "Did you like Detroit?" And I'm like, "Like might not be the phrase." Or "enjoy" might not be the phrase. I experienced Detroit. It's basically what I can say. But, yeah, it's very interesting. It's interesting film to try to tell people and recommend, because I don't really think I can actually recommend it. But I think it's a well-made film. I'll say that.
And I think that's one of the problems that we have with a lot of our black movies. They're all like that. Not all of them, but we have so many of them that are like, "Yeah, I watched it one time. It was really well done, and I'll never want to watch it again." It's like when I watched Rosewood the first time, and I was like, "Yeah, I watched it, and I got through it, and it's a pretty good movie, and I don't ever want to watch it again." You know, and 12 Years a Slave, I don't think I've watched it in full since I watched it the first time. And it's like, why? Why would I want to? I mean, they're not bad movies. They're really well-made movies, but I don't want to see them again, too. Detroit. The only difference I would put with Detroit is that it does take on sort of a invasion horror type aspect to it. You know what I mean? It really does start to feel that way around that middle section when they are actually being held captive. And I guess if I was in a horror type mood, I guess I could put myself into that kind of mood to watch it. But other than that, I don't see any other reason. I also have issues with the third act entirely, where they kind of go through the whole legal process afterwards. It just didn't feel like it had the detail that the rest of the movie had. So it was kind of that part that was a little disappointing to me. I think they probably could have ended it earlier, and a simple "Where are they now?" would have sufficed. You know what I mean? Like a simple, I mean, and I know you saw me leave a little bit early. I stood around the corner and watched everything. So I know they did do one of those "Where are they nows?" But I think it should have come earlier. We didn't need to see the whole legal process. We all knew they were getting off. All right, we all knew those guys were getting off. Okay, so I mean, there's no secret about that. There's nothing secret about anything that happens in this movie. So,
but let me ask you a question, Travis. What was the name of the movie we saw at Sundance? Not last year, but like, not early this year, but last year, about the band that gets trapped in a racist kind of KKK club. And they have to fight to get out.
Green Room.
Yeah. You know, the way Catherine Bigelow filmed the intense scenes, it was like watching Green Room. That's exactly what it felt like watching it. Like, really? So, I've heard a horror aspect added a couple of times. You're absolutely right, because that's exactly what it felt like.
Yeah, it really did feel like a horror during that whole section. You didn't know. I mean, even though most of us... maybe a lot of us, maybe some of us didn't, but a lot of us knew the story of what happened in Algiers. You still kind of was like, at least for me, I was still kind of at the edge of my seat watching those scenes, because you never knew how far she was going to take it. Even though she was telling a true story, there are some, she plays, you know, there are aspects of it that are fictionalized. And there are aspects of what goes on in there that we don't know the full details of what happened, especially when it comes to one particular death towards the end. We don't know. There are no firm details about what happened to that guy. So there's stuff that's Hollywoodized for it. So I didn't know how far she's going to take certain aspects. And I think Bigelow, as usual, does a pretty good job of being balanced without going overboard. You know what I mean? And I also have to give credit to the cast. The cast, it's an ensemble. It's a very big cast. Will Poulter. Anthony Mackie, who she worked with on The Hurt Locker. I totally forgot that he was in The Hurt Locker until I got reminded of it. He was like, they did. They It was a reunion. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was in Hurt Locker. Thanks so much about Jeremy Renner and kind of getting Anthony Mackie and how good he was in that. But yeah, it's a fantastic. I really liked Algie Smith, who I think he was in the New Edition movie, but I didn't really watch that. And Jacob Lattimore, who I think is a rising star. So this is a really great cast. Bette Bigelow is an actor's director. She's fantastic. I have issues with the third act. Overall, Detroit is a movie I do think people should see. I just don't think they're going to want to watch it again after that. But I would recommend it, though. So.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I fall on Detroit. I think there are people that need to see it. I don't think the people who look like us need to see it because I can turn on the news and see it.
Right.
I don't have to go to the movies to see it. That's all I'm saying. I'm like,
Exactly. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about Atomic Blonde. It stars Charlize Theron, James McAvoy. This has got a great cast too, you know. John Goodman, Toby Jones, Till Schweiger. I love the cast in this movie, and it's directed by David Leitch, who co-directed John Wick. And I think he's directing the next Deadpool movie, right? I can't remember which one of those guys.
He is.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool. And basically, it's set at the end of the Cold War, and Charlize Theron plays a super agent for MI6 who sent into Berlin to basically ferret out a mole and to recover some documents and find a guy who killed a former lover of hers. When I was watching this, I kept thinking about was how the action scenes are almost exactly like John Wick. And that's a great thing. Now, that's a good thing. The action in John Wick is phenomenal. And David Leitch is a fantastic action director. But what I really loved was sort of the mood of it. It's set in the 80s and has this great 80s synth pop soundtrack that was the thing that got me more than anything else. Almost as much as the action was the mood of it was fantastic. And of course, Charlize Theron, who I think is the most credible female action star we've had. I think she's better than Jolie was at her prime. I think she's better than Jolie was. I think when Charlize Theron like goes on the attack, she is so damn credible. I'm like, I think she could probably kick my ass. And I don't think that about Angelina Jolie. But when I watch Charlize Theron, I'm like, yeah, I think she could probably whip my ass. That's not easy to do, but she sells it, man. She absolutely does.
Well, the thing about this movie, which is really interesting, is to kind of like pick up on your point. I think that they shot it much in the style of John Wick, which I thought was good. The part that I didn't think was good is that they didn't give me enough. That's my only complaint. I wanted to see her. You know, I called it a WWWA movie, a white woman whooping ass movie. I wanted to see her whoop more ass. And I don't think I got enough, man, in this movie. The stuff that's in it though, man, the scene in the house, that is worth the price of admission right there to watch her
scene. The only thing that sucks about that scene for me is that they showed it in its entirety at Comic-Con during her panel. I mean, it's cool that they showed it, but I was like, that's such a damn good scene. I wish I was like, I really don't want to see it again because it won't be the same. And that's the only thing that's tough about it. But it is a fantastic scene. It's framed to look like it's done in one take, but it's not. You can kind of see the edits, but it looks like it's done in one shot. It reminded me of The Raid, very much so.
But you know the other thing that I really loved about what they did with her character? We've seen it too many times. Like, you watch James Bond movies or Jason Bourne. Bourne, they do it a little bit in the Bourne movies, where you have the villain the hero that whoops ass. And, you know, a lot of times in these films, he barely gets any punishment. Man, Charlize Theron gets her ass beat down in this movie, and they show it. And she's willing to, like, get rid of the vanity and, like, really get gritty with it. I love that about this movie. Watching her perform these stunts and do these and go through these scenes. Atomic Blonde, I think, I agree with you. I love the tone of it, you know, that as the wall is coming down and there's chaos over in Berlin, you know, she's out there, you know, ferrying out this mole. The action, there's a lot in this movie that I think I like. I would have loved more action, and I think the story, I'm not going to say the story is over people's head, but I think the story does get a little convoluted, even though I got it and I understood it, but it's like so many twists and turns in this story. It's like, okay, man, okay, you're giving me too many layers to this thing, man. Just kind of simplify this and just let the movie be what it's supposed to be. Let it be a good action vehicle and let Charlize Theron do what she does, man.
Yeah, I agree with you. The stuff around the action scenes isn't as compelling as it probably should be. You know, there are a lot of red herrings thrown out there, a lot of characters that could be the mole that are out there, you know, and none of them are really all that interesting. The only character that we really get to learn anything about is Charlize Theron's character. And I agree with you that this is a role that, while it's sexy, and she is sexy as hell in this movie, as usual, she's mostly covered in bruises and black eyes throughout the entire movie. it's not really a sexy part. She's not James Bond. She's not sleek and cool like a James Bond. I know everybody's comparing this movie to a female James Bond. It's really not. But her character is more weary than anything else. She seems like somebody who is almost tired of being a secret agent, tired of the games, tired of the espionage, tired of the not being able to trust people, tired of all of it. And that's something we don't really get to see from James Bond. James Bond is usually the unflappable agent. You know, that's not what this character is. It's totally different. And it's a different kind of role for Theron, too, and I think she's great at it. I do see this as the beginning of a franchise. I think it almost has to be.
You know what? I have this crazy idea. I know it's the beginning of a franchise, but I just wish there would be a way that, like, how they bring in Dwayne Johnson into, like, a Fast and Furious. If you could bring in Charlize Theron's character into a John Wick movie and let them, like, fight on the same side, wow, that'd be fun to watch.
Yes, it would. That would be amazing. But, you know, they're going to have to up to Annie, whatever they do it for a sequel. They're going to have to up to Annie somehow. And they're going to have to bring in somebody. I bet you they would bring in another female star who could go toe-to-toe with her. I'm trying to think who it could be. Somebody like a Michelle Rodriguez.
I mean, it can't be Angelina Jolie. Who would it be? That's a great question.
Like maybe a Ronda Rousey?
Right. I was going to say Gina Carano. I mean, you know, I don't know who you would get. Gal Gadot is not, I mean, even though she's this Wonder Woman, I don't think she's incredible enough. I'm with you on that. I don't get the feeling watching.
Gal Gadot would sell more tickets. She would sell the most tickets, though, because people would be like, Charlize Theron versus Wonder Woman.
Nah. What's the character that Charlize Theron played in Mad Max? Because that's kind of...
Oh, Furiosa, Furiosa.
Yeah, that's
Wonder
who it'd be. Furiosa versus Wonder Woman.
Yep, you're right. I think people would pay through the nose to see that movie. I think I would too, to be honest. As long as David Leitch directed it, I'd want to go. I'd pay to see that for sure. But it's a good movie. It's a good movie for action. I agree that it's not enough. There's that car scene in the beginning. There's a little bit of a fight in the middle, and then there's that awesome sequence at the end, and then that's basically it. There are three decent action set pieces. There probably should have been twice that. You know,
Travis, I predict by the weekend there's going to be an op-ed piece somewhere from a woman that's like, how come a woman can't get as much fight time? I know it's coming, man. Are we living it?
I've seen a lot of articles already about wondering if this movie is really, you know, female empowerment or if it's even really a good movie for women to see. I've seen a lot of articles on that already. Our friend Joanna Langfield asked that question the other day. I don't know if she managed to fit all of that into her movie minute review. I don't know how you could, but I guess if somebody could.
No, I don't think she did.
If anybody could, it would be Joanna.
Well, that's true. But no, but I do think that showing a woman who can get gritty like a guy, to me, I mean, I'm not a woman, so I can't speak on that point, but I think, it's part of the equality. Women whoop ass too. And I enjoyed watching her be that character. We've seen women for years, you know, in these roles. We've seen Charlize Theron and Aeon Flux, and like you said, we talked about Mad Max. So she has gained a reputation and is credible as an actress doing this. So, I'm waiting to read some of these think pieces on this film, though.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it had to do with the character's sexuality. Her character is very openly bisexual, and I think there's been a lot of writing about that as well. I like the fact that they included it and didn't make a big deal about it. I also like the fact that they had her making out with Sophia Boutella. That is just the caveman in me. I was perfectly happy with it.
I was sitting next to you. We were both happy. Nudging each other like, yeah.
both quite pleased with that. I imagine a lot of the guys were too. So
you sir, are a nut.
But anyway, my friend, well, I appreciate you coming on to talk about both these movies, man. When you get your show, when you bring your show back, I need to be the first guest on there.
Man, we need a better sound, man. I hate doing episodes and I listen back at them. This sounds like this.
You know what we ought to do? We ought to talk to Arch and Ann about where they do their show from.
Yeah, you know, people have sent me some stuff, man, about I think that's Tony Kornheiser's podcast network. So we probably have to try to figure out if we can get a deal to bring back Addicted to Film and put it over there.
I think we should talk to Arch about that, because Arch asked me for like 2 years, so ever since he retired, he asked me for like 2 years on how to do a podcast. And I kept explaining it to him, and I kept explaining it to him over and over again. I was like, Arch, you need to do a podcast. This is how you do it. And and finally he did it. I think he owes me one. I think he needs to hook us up with whoever we can get into it in that studio.
well, they got Ann on today and Arch doing the show. And you need a little color over there, man. I mean, come on, bro. Really? Come on, man. Come on.
Exactly.
But yeah, that'd be a good suggestion. If we see Arch at the next movie, man, we need to just corner him. He can't get away from us anymore. He's 72.
Right.
So.
Exactly.
I love you, Arch.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk to him at the next screening. I'm sure he'll be there. But anyway,
right,
man, this has been fun. I appreciate you calling in, man. It's been great.
Not a problem, bro.
All right, man, I'll talk to you later.
Take care, man. Later.
That is Tim Gordon from Keeping It Real with Tim Gordon, the president of the Black Reel Awards and the president of WAFCA, the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. Wilson Morales is supposed to be calling in by now. I don't know what he's doing. He hasn't called yet. If he doesn't call, then we're going to end the show early because I don't have audio. I don't have audio to play the clips from the Comic-Con. I kind of needed him to help me flush this thing out. We're going to take a quick break. I will be right back. I don't know where he's at. All right, well, I'm going to run down a couple of the things that I saw at Comic-Con that I really enjoyed. And this was for me, possibly the most enjoyable San Diego Comic-Con that I've had in all my years of going. One of the reasons is that I never had to stand out in the atrocious Hall H line for 2 days just to get in on a Saturday. And yes, I meant that when I say 2 days, because the people who wanted to get in for Saturday were lining up on Thursday. Yes, that is a fact. That is the way it is at Comic-Con. If you ever wanted to go to San Diego Comic-Con and there's something you want to see, you better plan ahead. I mean, if you want to get into Hall H on a Friday or a Saturday, you better plan ahead big time. You better have somebody planted in that line a day or two early. That is how it is. It's pretty disgusting. Before I was fortunate enough to be able to work a couple angles and get in there basically whenever I wanted to. So we'll see if I'm able to do that again next year. I doubt it. They'll be swapping the rules around again, and I'll have to adjust. We'll see. But I got plenty of sleep this time, so it was perfectly fine. Stuff that was actually in Hall H. You know, on Friday is when they start rolling out the big guns, Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, stuff like that. And I enjoy those panels, but I don't get into them the way I get into the stuff on Saturday, which is, you know, Marvel and Warner Brothers and stuff like that. I enjoy the Game of Thrones panel. And this year was interesting only because normally in July, Game of Thrones is in its hiatus. So nobody's talking. Nobody's saying anything. This is a rare time when the season is actually going on. So what do you think happened? Absolutely nothing. Nobody's going to reveal anything. They didn't reveal squat. they didn't do anything. But it was kind of fun because they had a guy who played Hodor hosting. And, yeah, he kind of tried to put himself over a little bit, a little too much for me. Not as much as Reggie Watts. I don't know who that guy is. But Reggie Watts was hosting the Westworld panel, and he really spent the entire time putting himself over, telling jokes, cracking jokes that nobody else would find funny but him. It was terrible. But the Game of Thrones panel is enjoyable. The Walking Dead panel is always a lot of fun, just because the character, the cast, is they have such camaraderie together, and they know how to tell jokes. This is the first year I think they didn't have Steven Yeun there, for obvious reasons, and it felt a little weird. And they did something really sweet, which is it didn't have the usual Chris Hardwick moderator, thank God, because I find Chris Hardwick infuriating. He didn't host. They were paying tribute to the stuntman who died on set a few weeks ago, and I regret that I've forgotten his name right now. But they were paying a really nice tribute to him. They had a moment of silence, which Hardwick did lead a moment of silence for him. And then they went and they did the panel just – the cast and the crew, they talked about him a little bit, and then before they got into things, so that was a really nice moment. But moving into Saturday, the Saturday kicked off with Warner Brothers, and of course you got Ready Player One, which blew the roof off the place. Steven Spielberg was there, so was the cast. I was really eager to see how they were going to do that, simply because the book crams in the book by Ernest Cline, who was also there, has so many 80s pop culture references that I imagine getting all of them, getting the rights to use them must have been so hard. And then there was the fact that Spielberg was the creator of many of those references. So to have him directing his own movie, it was really interesting to hear him talk about how he had to kind of tone it down with the stuff that was his. Otherwise, you know, it would have been unfair, you know? So it was really interesting to hear him talk about that. And then the trailer for it was just out of this world. It is available right now. If you go to punchdrunkcritics.com and just look under trailers or type in Ready Player One, you'll find the trailer for that. It is incredible. You can see everything from Back to the Future, Freddy Krueger. I think I saw Link from Zelda in there. All sorts of different things. It dozens of pop culture references in there, from video games, movies, TV, books. It is amazing. Music. Ready Player One is going to be awesome when it comes out, and I can't wait. It was also Ready Player One is also Blade Runner 2049, which, you know, I think looks great, but I'm not as into as everybody else is. And then, of course, there was the Justice League panel with Jason Momoa coming in there, rocking it out. On his way down to all the way down to the stage. And this was interesting for me because the news broke the day before that Ben Affleck was leaving as Batman, that Justice League would be it for him. And then he was done. He was not going to star in Matt Reeves, the Batman. He was not going to do the solo movie. He was out. And, you know, while the news is still a rumor, it is spread, and it is, you know, they addressed it, which I wasn't sure what they were going to do, but it would have been awkward if they didn't. So they did address it right off the bat. Are you staying as Batman? And you had Ben Affleck, you know, God bless him. He he tried to make it sound like he wasn't ready to go. He was, oh, you know, I'm the luckiest man in the world. I get to play Batman, blah, yada, yada, yada. I'm here as long as Warner Brothers wants me. I'm here. Okay, well, he did it so often. Like, every time he was asked a question whether they had anything to do with that or not, he would go back to how lucky he was to be playing Batman. And I told Wilson, I was like, he's overselling this thing. I don't buy this for a second. And then I look online, you know, I was going to go post the story that, hey, he addressed this. And I look online and everybody's talking about, Ben Affleck denies he's leaving as Batman. No, he didn't. That's the one thing he didn't do. Sorry about that. I'm hitting mute because there was a cop car riding somewhere not too far away from here, and I'm sure everybody could hear it. Now, the one thing Ben Affleck did not do was deny the rumors. That's the one thing he didn't do. He said a lot of things. Denying it was not one of them. So don't buy that. Don't be at all surprised if and when Ben Affleck is out as Batman. Should not be surprised. If Matt Reeves, who's writing his own script now, remember, he threw out Ben Affleck and Jeff Johns' script. He threw it out, and he's writing his own. This is going to be a completely different movie than the one Ben Affleck had planned. So he may not even want to be Batman in that movie now. This isn't his movie. So, I mean, don't listen to people that say he denied it. He did not. Otherwise, we saw Warner Brothers, they know how to get Comic-Con off to a hot start, man. They know how to get that day hot going. They did this whole big panoramic view, and Hall H is huge. It seats about 6,500 to 7,000 people. It's big. They did this panoramic view of their entire lineup, all these heroes, all these villains everywhere, and they ran down their lineup of movies. You had Wonder Woman 2, you had Green Lantern Corps, you had Suicide Squad 2, you had all this stuff, Aquaman, The Flash, you know, but they didn't have Gotham Sirens, which has people speculating that that movie's not happening and that David Ayer is out. He is rejected that. He says that he put up a tweet that makes it seem as if he's staying. I'm pretty sure that movie's going to happen. They also mentioned Justice League Dark as a movie that is definitely happening. So we got a rundown of their entire roster. And then we got, of course, the new Justice League trailer, which is out there and everybody can see. And it's the best trailer by far. I don't know if any of that is it's Joss Whedon's influence since he took over as director, was Zack Snyder out. But it's the best trailer they've had so far. It's funny. It's brighter. It just looks better. So, I don't know. Joss Whedon seems to have already had an impact. And then, of course, there was the Marvel panel that came later in the day. It was the very last panel of the day. It always is. Marvel always caps off Comic-Con. Yeah, there's a Sunday, but nobody cares about what goes on in Hall H on Sunday. Marvel was it. and Marvel, I'm going to say this. Marvel toned it down this year. You know, they opened up with a really cool intro video from Paul Rudd and Michael Pena, where they're basically running down the entire history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And at the end of it, you discover that they're talking to Michelle Pfeiffer. And they're trying to get her on board to play the Wasp in Ant-Man and the Wasp. They're getting her to play the original Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. So she has been confirmed to play Janet Van Dyne in Ant-Man and the Wasp. It was just a really clever way of breaking that news. I love that. And Lawrence Fishburne is also joining the film as Bill Foster, a.k.a. Black Goliath, basically the Black Giant Man. He uses Pym particles also. So you got Lawrence Fishburne, you got Michelle Pfeiffer in Ant-Man and the Wasp. We didn't get any footage of that movie yet. I don't think it's started shooting yet. I'm not sure. It may have. It probably has, but not enough to release any footage. That's fine. Then we got the Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok panels. The Black Panther stuff was incredible. The Black Panther looks like it might be the coolest, blackest superhero movie ever. if they could find a way to get Wesley Snipes in there, I might shit myself. And there's got to be a way to get Wesley Snipes in there somehow. I mean, maybe not in this movie, but the next movie. They got to. What if Blade showed up in Black Panther 2? What if that was how they introduced him back to... Oh, man, I almost shed a tear just thinking about how amazing that would be to be in Hall H and them showing footage from Black Panther 2. And suddenly you see Wesley Snipes in it, and he's got fangs and shades and a sword. And you're like, oh, man, if that happened. But anyway, they released some footage. They put out some footage from Black Panther, which is amazing. There's a fight in a casino. And I was telling a friend that it reminded me of the scene in Kill Bill where they were fighting the crazy 88s. It was like a top four, bottom four battle. It reminded me of that. It was amazing. And Ryan Coogler, the director, said, we are not putting this footage out to anybody. So it is not getting out there. And I haven't seen any footage of it anywhere. I don't think it's been leaked. So that's good. And then, of course, we had the Thor Ragnarok trailer, which is great. It's better than the first one. Again, Marvel keeps improving on their trailers. They always do. Nothing really new to learn about that. It just looked fantastic. Somehow, this phase is turning out to be Marvel's best phase. And we're three phases in, and you'd think it would be getting stale, but instead it gets better. And then, of course, they ended the show. They act like they were leaving. But then they ended the show by showing the Avengers Infinity War teaser that played at D23. And I really can't add anything else to it that you haven't read in 100 other places by now. All I can say is Thanos is going to be a bad motherfucker, man. I don't see how anybody survives. I just don't see it. But then again, I've read the Infinity Gauntlet. I read the Infinity War. I know how those comics went. Thanos is a badass. He could destroy the universe, but the heroes live. They'll find a way to live in these movies too. But when you're watching it on the screen with him raising the gauntlet into the air and pulling down shards of the moon to crash down around the Avengers, it's a sight, man. It is a sight. And of course, Hall H blew up. Just blew up. It was crazy. But those are the best things I saw. Of course, you know me. If you know me, you know I have an obsession with pop vinyl figures. I did a lot of shopping on the show floor. Spent way too much money. I'm broke now. I'm broke for life. So a lot of great stuff. Met a lot of cool people. Comic-Con is great. If you have a chance to go there, even if it's just once, you'll owe it to yourself to go. Whatever you like, it is there. There's nothing that's not there. I mean, if you like anime, there's plenty of anime. If you like pro wrestling, hey, WWE and Lucha Underground are there. I mean, you like My Little Pony? They're there. Everything is there for you. If you like comics, comics are everywhere. If you like toys, toys are everywhere. If you like TV shows, your favorite TV show is probably at Comic-Con. It's all there for you. I always say go check it out. You're going to have a lot of fun no matter what. It is worth it. All right? And that's pretty much the end of the show. I mean, Wilson never showed up. I'll have a case about that later. And for not having any audio, this actually turned out pretty well. Me and Tim got a lot of conversation in about Detroit and Atomic Blonde. I got to run down some of the things I saw at Comic-Con, which I'm happy about. Also, this hasn't turned out too badly, and I hope you all enjoyed listening to me talk about it. I hope you enjoyed it. So I'm out of here. I'm Travis Hobson. This has been Cinema Royale. Where's my music? My music's there, though, isn't it? There it is. This has been Cinema Royale. Check me out at punchdrunkcritics.com every single day. And, of course, check out Critical, the Movie Critics Network, on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook. We have some great, great movie podcasts. Whatever you like, we got something for you. We all love movies and Critical, man, just like you. All right, I'm out of here. I will see you next week. Goodbye.